No, you can't hear me? Can you hear me now? Craigery, sorry, we didn't do a sound check, obviously, which is my fault. Can you hear me now? No, can't hear me? Can you hear me now? No, still can't hear me? What about now? You can hear me? Don's shaking his head, no. Can you hear me? Okay. I will try to be loud, which normally isn't hard, but in this setting it is. Good morning. So, before we get into the text, I'm going to ask you to pray with me. Pray for me and pray for you. Father, God, I thank you for bringing us together. Father, I thank you for the love that's in this church. Father, the love for you and the love for each other. God, I pray that you will use this sermon to glorify you, that you will open the hearts of the church, God. Help us to see the application to us today. Praise you and thank you. Amen. Our text today is Exodus 21, starts at verse 33. While you flip there, I'm going to tell you a hilarious story. It's hilarious in my opinion. About 2 months ago, I had a dream that I got up here to preach, and it was full, and I could not remember my text. So I said, I know it's in Exodus, so I flipped over to Exodus 1. I said, just let me skim through, and I skimmed the whole first half of the book of Exodus till I got to the text. Thankfully, that did not happen this morning. All right, so we're in Exodus 21, verse 33. That's the only funny story I can tell you because I got to talk fast. So, John mentioned this a little bit last week, is that we're looking at case law, or civil law, or judicial law. So the moral law, the law can be broken into three segments: moral law, civil law, and ceremonial law. The civil law didn't exist to create a morally perfect society. There are moral principles in the civil law, but that's not the reason why it existed. There are multiple reasons. One, probably the primary reason, is to create a livable society. One is, I believe, to show the character of God. As we look at these cases, these case laws, we can see the character of God in all of them. You will see as we go through these cases that there are penalties that are most likely used as deterrent for crime. And you will see as we go through these cases, not necessarily just these, maybe the ones in the sermon to follow and maybe in John's previously, that you will see that there are rights that you have and that I have. And that is where the term God-given right has come from. That's often used incorrectly in today's society, but there are God-given rights. So, all of these texts, and you also, one other point that I missed, you will also see similarity to our laws in a lot of these. One other thing is in these laws, or in these case laws, it's easy to see that, especially mine, all of mine have to do with one topic, and that is the restitution for livestock. And it's easy to think that if I don't own livestock, that doesn't apply to me. It does. There is application for all of us in every single one of these. Whether you own livestock or not, there's application. Now, I can't give you application on all of these that apply to you. I can't necessarily even give you all the application off the top of my head on all of these that apply to me. But there is application in the modern day 21st century that applies to all of us. Another thing to consider is that even though they're dealing with livestock, they're not dealing with pets. And I'm not saying that there's not application to pets, but most of us have pets. These are livestock. They exist for a livelihood. So keep that in mind as we go through these. So there are 17 scenarios in my text. Like I said, they're all dealing with livestock, but there is one moral principle behind all of those, and that's point number one on your outline. If you are responsible for my loss, you are morally responsible for my restitution. You might say that if you are responsible for my loss, I have a right to be restored by you, a God-given right. That moral principle is behind every single one of these 17 scenarios. Compare it as we go through. Tell me later if it's not, but it is. But tell me later if it's not. Okay, so if the case laws weren't given to create a morally perfect society, then how can I justify that statement? It is an issue of morality because the one who requires it requires it. In Exodus chapter 20, verse 22, it says, "And the Lord said to Moses, thus you shall say to the people of Israel," and he doesn't stop. Through the end of 20, through all of 21, to where our text lands, is God giving command to Moses. Because God is the one who is requiring it, it becomes a moral issue. It is similar to a parent telling a child, don't ride their bicycle on the road. There's nothing immoral about riding a bicycle on the road. But the second a parent gives that command, it becomes an issue of morality. And last thing before we get into the text is an issue at hand in all of these principles of stealing. Now, there are specific cases, specific scenarios where literal stealing takes place. But behind every single one of these is stealing. If after church, I'm the first one out the door and I hit Charisse's Jeep and I don't stop and say anything, her eyes got big. If I don't stop and say anything or text her or call her, and she gets out there and there's a red streak running down the side of her new Jeep, I've stolen from her. I don't have anything to show for it, but I have stolen from her. So, that's a lot to throw at you, but as we go through these, the main thing I want you to keep in mind is if you are responsible for my loss, you are morally responsible for my restitution. As we go through these, see if that applies. One last thing is that on your outline, you'll see starting at point two, which is the first scenario, my pit, your dead ox. All of these are set out so there's a me and there's a you. Pick which one you are and keep that. You can be the you or you can be the me. I can be the you and I can be the me, but whichever one you make yourself, hold through that through the whole sermon. So let's start the text. My pit, your dead ox, which is going to be 21, 33, and 34. When a man opens a pit, or when a man digs a pit, does not cover it over, and an ox or a donkey falls into it, the owner of the pit shall make restitution. He shall give money to its owner, and the dead beast shall be his. So, first of all, most likely that's a well. That word has been translated from pit, well, and cistern. Most likely it's a well, regardless of whether it's a barbecue pit or a well or a cistern or some other type of pit, the principle still applies. If I've got a pit on my land, and John McCarty and I are neighbors, his ox falls into it, I've got to give him the value of that ox, the living value of that ox, and his ox becomes mine. That is a case of negligence, pure negligence. It's a dead tree in a windstorm. I'm going to chase a rabbit for a second. This is the only rabbit I'm going to chase. Just follow me through here. So if John McCarty and I live next door to each other, and I've got a dead tree on my property, and a windstorm comes through, and it blows the dead tree over on his house, who pays for that? I do. My insurance will pay for that because I'm liable. I'm negligent by having a dead tree. This is the exact same scenario. So I've got a dead tree. It falls on his house. I've left my well open. His ox falls in. I'm on the hook. It's a square purchase. He gets back what he had before. He ends up back at square one. I lose something because of my negligence. This is one of the scenarios that for us, for Americans in the 21st century, it's probably hard to understand, or not hard at first to understand, because my thinking when I first started studying this text is, if it's my well, he ought to have a right, or ought to have a responsibility to keep his livestock out of it, right? I mean, that's kind of how we think as Americans. that it's on my land, it's minding its own business, so what? Keep your stuff on your property. Think of it like this. If I've got a mailbox and it gets hit and it gets torn down, and a week later I put up another, or next day, whatever, I put up another mailbox, and a week later it gets torn down again. So I get a 4-inch PVC pipe and I fill it full of concrete and I mount my mailbox to that. That one's going to be a lot tougher to get torn down. I ought to have enough love for my neighbor to understand that sometimes cars run off the road. That if someone hits that mailbox, it's going to tear their car up pretty bad. But worse, it could hurt someone or it could kill someone. The mailbox is mine. It's on my property. But I ought to be concerned enough for my neighbor that that doesn't happen. In the same way, if we live next door to each other, there's an understanding, an assumed understanding in this text, that sometimes my livestock's going to get on his land, and sometimes his livestock's going to get on my land. And I ought to have enough love for him to keep that covered up. In the same way, he ought to have enough love for me to keep his covered up. And if he doesn't, and my ox goes in it, he owes me some money. And if his ox goes in mine, I owe him some money. Right? Next point. Need to move quick. Your dead ox, my ox. 3a, verse 35. When one man's ox butts another so that it dies, they shall sell the live ox and share its price, and the price and the dead beast also they shall share. So now we got an issue where I got to pick on someone other than John. Mike. Mike's got an ox, I've got an ox. They get in a fight, and mine wins. So we sell the live ox, split the money. We split the dead ox. What we're doing with the dead ox, there's some possibilities of what we're able to do with it, but that's someone's text for next week, so I'm not going to get into that. But first question for you is, well, first point, I should say, is there's not necessarily negligence on that, right? So I didn't know my ox was dangerous, and we can see that by the next verse. I didn't know that my ox was dangerous. He didn't know because I didn't know. It's a scenario where sometimes bad things just happen, right? So he's not at fault, I'm not at fault, but here's where we're at. It's a living tree. So I'm going to throw you another little insurance bit of knowledge. If John McCarty and I live next door to each other and I've got a live tree on my property and it falls over in a windstorm and lands on his house, who's got to pay for that? He does, because I'm not negligent. His insurance pays for that. Even though it's on my property, sometimes bad things happen. This scenario is not a square trade. Mike has lost a living ox, and I've got lost a living ox. I've got half the money to buy another one, he's got half the money to buy another one, and we both have half a dead ox, right? Is there a duty to inform when we sell the ox? I would think so. A duty to inform that the ox has a history of being violent. I would think so. John talked about last week, he had texts that discussed that when an ox gores someone, if the owner knew, that the owner of the animal was to be stoned. So there's a possibility that in this scenario, when we go to the livestock auction, we don't say anything, and this ox goes and kills someone, we could be on the hook for murder, right? The idea behind this case law is that even though I haven't trained my ox to be a fighting ox, it's still my ox. There's still responsibility on my part. Next scenario. Your dead ox, my dangerous ox, verse 36. Or, tying it to the previous verse, if it is known that the ox has been accustomed to gore in the past and its owner has not kept it in, he shall repay ox for ox, and the dead beast shall be his. This kind of ought to be common sense for us. We got a scenario where our oxen get in a fight, mine wins, and I knew mine was dangerous. Because I knew it was dangerous, I owe him an ox. Let's see, where was I at? That is a known-to-be dead tree. There's still negligence. Not necessarily intentional, but there's still negligence. And the ox that he gets is probably not my dangerous one because he has lost value in that scenario. The idea behind the case law is I knew my property was dangerous. I knew my livestock was dangerous. Moving on. 4A. Your livestock I've sold or I've slaughtered. If a man steals an ox or a sheep and kills it or sells it, he shall repay 5 oxen for an ox and 4 sheep for a sheep. So now we've gone where the person who's lost has ended up with 1, to the person who's lost 1 has ended up with 4 or 5. Why is that? I have a theory. And the theory is this, that let's assume for a second, and bear with me, follow me with this. So let's assume for a second that it's 4 oxen, there's a typo on your outline, by the way. Notice that 11:30 last night. 4 oxen and 4 sheep rather than 5 oxen. So why is it 4? I have a theory that the reason why it's 4 is because not only have I stolen it, which was an intentional act, it wasn't a case of negligence, but not only have I stolen it, I've sold it or I've slaughtered it. I've gone through more steps where my conscience can stop me and I haven't listened to it. That's why I think it's 4 for 1. Now, the only issue is it's 5 for 1 for an ox. Why is that? I think it's because an ox, and maybe I'm wrong, you can tell me later, an ox does a whole lot more than a sheep. I don't know what the values of them were at this point in time, but that's not relevant, I would say. I think it's the idea that an ox does a lot more than a sheep. At my office, I've got the front of the office is almost all glass. You could break in no time, and there's a light I leave on 24/7, so at night you can see right in. And right by the window, I've got 3 waiting chairs. I've paid $150 or $175 each for those chairs. And on my desk, sometimes I leave my laptop. I say my laptop. The laptop actually belongs to shelter insurance. So if someone steals that laptop, I'm out, no money. And the next day, I'll get another one overnighted to me. If someone steals that computer chair, I'm out $150 or $175. I hope that if someone ever breaks into my office, between the two, they'll steal the chair. Because that computer provides for me. It's used for making a living. I'm in it for a lot less money than I'm in, or a lot less. I'm in it for $150 less than I'm in the chair for, but I need that computer a lot more. And I think that's why the ox has more value than the sheep as far as the restitution goes. Is that fair to say? Let's see, where was I at? Oh, here's your connection to the trees. So now, this is the last tree reference I'm going to give you. So now let's say John McCarty and I live next door to each other. And his ox falls in my well and I pay him money and I'm mad because he ought to keep his ox on his own land and all this stuff. So I decide I'm going to cut a tree down so it lands on his house. Who pays for that? Whose insurance pays for that? No one's. Because it's an intentional act. This is a scenario where it's intentional. The restitution is higher. And yes, we ought to know that it's wrong to steal someone's property and to sell it or slaughter it. I'm not saying that. But the act is intentional, meaning that when something wrong is done intentionally, there's more expected of us. Right? It's the idea behind the case law. Next one, 4B. You're stolen livestock and you caught me in the act. If a thief is found breaking in and is struck so that he dies, there shall be no blood guilt for him. But if the sun has risen on him, there shall be blood guilt for him. He shall surely pay. So, why is that? Why is it that at night he's justified in killing him and in the daytime he's not? I will tell you another story. About 3 months ago, I was laying in bed and I heard a loud metal thud. Something hit or kicked my front door, and I heard it again. And my cat's staring down the hall, so I know I'm not the only one who heard that. I know it wasn't in my imagination. And it's about 3:30 in the morning. I couldn't sleep. And I laid there in bed, thinking, what do I do? I wasn't, at that point in time, I wasn't scared. Now, if I heard my door open or heard it break in, then yeah, fear would have probably come in. But I remember thinking, what on earth do I do? And I called the police. I didn't call 911, but I called the police. And I said, hey, I'm pretty sure someone tried to kick in my front door. I'm not saying it for certain, but that's what it sounds like. I said, don't come in. Lights and sirens blazing, but I would like someone to come look. And she said, okay, we'll be there quickly. And I said, hey, I said, I don't want this to happen. I said, but I'm armed, and I'm going to protect myself. I said, I don't want to have to shoot anyone, though. If someone had broken into my house and came into my bedroom, and I'm not saying I went and hunted them down, but they came into my bedroom, and I was in fear because I don't know if they're armed or not. Maybe they are armed, and I know it. Well, let's say I don't know if they're armed or not, and I shot them. I don't think that is morally equivalent to murder. I would think that would be considered justified by God. The law, I don't know. It's got to go through court, I'm sure. But according to God, there's an unknown in this situation. So if it's at night and his hands are empty, there's an unknown. You don't know if he's there to steal. You don't know if he's there to kill. That's why there's justification if it's at nighttime. However, you can see that there's still the sanctity of life. That the thief's life, if he is there just to steal, if it's in the daytime and we know he's not armed, that there's still value in his life, right? You can see that it's never, according to God, morally okay to kill to protect property, but it is okay to kill to protect life. Next one, 4C, your stolen livestock, you caught me in the act, and I'm poor. Verse 3, talking about if someone is in the house, if he has nothing, then he shall be sold for his theft. Is the restitution or the punishment fair for that? Right, so we looked at last week, John pointed out that the maximum for slavery is 6 years. Yes, that's fair. Because, first of all, God gave it. But second of all, there's a limit on that. There's a range. And John pointed this out last week, so I'm not going to go too far into it. But 21:30 says, if a ransom is imposed on him, then he shall give for the redemption of his life whatever is imposed. So there's a range that he can be sentenced to for being sold for slavery. Even though he didn't get away with something, even though if I break into Don Tibbett's house and I steal his ox, because he keeps the ox in his house, if I break into Don's house and I steal his ox, or try to, and I don't get away with it, and I've got nothing to show for it, he's still entitled to restitution. He still lost something. His rights have been violated. So there's still a debt for me to pay. You can see the grace of God in all these, and I meant to point that out. But you can see the grace of God in all of these. But you can see the grace of God in the sense that he's got a right to be restored, whether I've gotten away with it or not. I've got the grace of God that his punishment that can be enforced on me is limited. And that as a thief, there's still value in my life. Right? Right. 4D. Your stolen livestock and you caught me red-handed. This is pretty straightforward. If I'm caught, it's in my hand, I shall pay double. Thief still owes. There, even though probably didn't get far with it, the thief owes. I don't think any of us have a problem with that, right? Right. All right, next principle. Your field grazed bare, my livestock. Verse 5. If a man causes a field or a vineyard to be grazed over, or lets his beast loose and it feeds in another man's field, he shall make restitution from the best in his own field and in his own vineyard. So now we've got the situation that the beavers and I live next door to each other, and I'm out of food, so I take my ox over to their property, or I leave my gate open, or I open their gate, or whatever. My ox ends up over on their property. I owe them, for whatever amount is eaten, I owe them that same amount, but I owe the best. Why is that? It's because I've stolen from them. It's because even though I'm out of cow food, or ox food, or sheep food, or whatever, I'm out of grass, I'm still stealing. They've got it. I can make a deal where I buy it from them. I pay to let my cow feed over there. We agree that the next time I sell one, we split the money. The next time we slaughter one, we split the cow, whatever. Or they can offer for me to feed it for free. But the issue is stealing. And every single one of these, the issue is stealing. Right? Right. Keep going. Your field, my fire. Verse 6. If a fire breaks out and catches in thorns so that the stacked grain or the standing grain or the field is consumed, he who started the fire shall make restitution. This ought to be very easy for us to understand because a lot of us live out in the country and have dealt with fires that have gotten out of hand. It's not clear what exactly the restitution is. Most likely, it's a back to square one. The gist of it is, it's my fire, it's my responsibility. The reasoning behind the case law is that you should only have to worry about the fires you start. And I'm not just talking about through these, and I said this at the beginning, but in all these case laws, it's not just a matter of property. So don't think that. There can be application that applies to other things. As far as speaking literally, you ought to only have to worry about the fires you start, even though I started it on my land. I have a responsibility to keep it contained. You don't, unless you started the fire. Next scenario, your possessions entrusted to me that have been stolen and the thief is caught. 7a, verses 7 through 9. If a man gives to his neighbor money or goods to keep safe and it is stolen from the man's house and the thief is found, he shall pay double. Verses 7. And the thief is found, he shall pay double. No one has a problem with that, right? We covered that earlier. Moving on. Your possessions, money, or goods that have been stolen and the thief is not caught, verses 8 through 9. Here's where I need to slow down a little bit. If the thief is not found, the owner of the house shall come near to God to show whether or not he has put his hand to his neighbor's property. For every breach of trust, whether it is for ox, for a donkey, for a sheep, for a cloak, or for any kind of lost thing, of which one says, this is it, the case of both parties shall come before God. The one whom God condemns shall pay double. Before we get into the text itself on this, something I want to clarify is many translations say judges right there, not God. The word is Elohim. So that word translates to both. In John chapter 10, verse 34, you don't have to turn there, the Pharisees are attacking Jesus. They're saying, hey, you call yourself the Son of God. They're trying to stone him. Jesus answered them, is it not written in your law, I said you are gods? If he called them gods to whom the word of God came, and scripture cannot be broken, do you say of him who the Father consecrated and sent in the world, you are blaspheming because I said I am the Son of God? So that word was given for judges. It was given for God as well, the one holy God. But it was given for judges. So we've got to look at the context of Scripture and determine whether or not which one that means. In this case, it means judges. So, back to the text. Still with me? I know I'm going fast. I got to go fast. I'm sorry. Where were we? 7b. Okay, so here's the situation. If a man gives to his neighbor money or goods to keep safe, and it is stolen from the man's house, then if the thief is found, he shall pay double. If a thief is not found, the owner of the house shall come near to God to show whether or not he has put his hand on his neighbor's property. For every breach of trust, whether it's for ox, for donkey, for a sheep, for a cloak, or any kind of thing, any kind of lost thing, of which one says, this is it, the case of both parties shall come before God, the one whom God condemns shall pay double to his neighbor. So, here's a situation where I'm keeping Ted's money at my house because Ted's going out of town, or for any reason. This is where it gets tricky. We got to go to court. In this situation, whether it's with physical property or not, this ought to teach us to be careful who we trust and be careful with what we are entrusted with. It is most likely a hired individual or a business, right? So I didn't take my money to Ted's house so it could have some more Uncle Ted time. It's there for a reason, and it's probably in my financial best interest. The idea is that when someone's caught, restitution's double, right? We're going to see a lot of similarity to point number 8 in all these things. Point number 8, moving on. Your livestock that dies is hurt or is driven away. Here's where things change too. So we've gone from money or goods to livestock. So the how things play out look totally different. And we'll see that in the text. But keep in mind as we read the next couple verses that there are variables in the livestock, right? So livestock moves, livestock eats, livestock gets killed by other animals. Money doesn't do that. Starting at verses 10 through 13. The man gives to his neighbor a donkey or an ox or a sheep or any beast to keep safe, and it dies or is injured or is driven away without anyone seeing it. An oath by the Lord shall be between them both to see whether or not he has put his hand to his neighbor's property. The owner shall accept the oath, and he shall not make restitution. But if it is stolen from him, he shall make restitution to its owner. So here's where things get way different than they've been before as far as these case laws. Still, it's probably a hired individual or a business. There's a reason why my livestock is over at Jason and Tina's house. It's probably not over there so it can spend time with Aunt Tina. No offense, Tina. Actually, that's a bad example because it could be because you're an animal lover. But, you know, the oath has to be accepted. So there's a level of trust in both this issue and the previous one. I've already trusted you, but in this one, I have to accept your oath to the Lord. And I think that's partially because I trust you. But it's also because by making an oath to the Lord, I'm either being very honest or very foolish. John talked about this back on his sermon on Second Commandment, I believe, that you'll see in court, if you ever go to court, someone has to swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help them God. And the idea is, I couldn't think of exactly how to word this, but the idea is, I don't want to say giving permission, but just roll with me on this. The idea is that they are giving permission, it's not the right way to word it, you know what I mean, to God to strike them down if they are not being honest, right? If someone makes an oath to the Lord that they haven't done something, odds are good they're being very foolish or very honest. And either way, that oath in a scenario like this has to be accepted. If it has been stolen, I think I already read that, but if it has been stolen, he shall make restitution to its owner. So the person keeping the property, I forgot who was keeping my property. Was it you, Ted? Were you keeping my property? I think so. If it's stolen, you owe me, right? So there's an assumption in this text, or an implied assumption, that when my livestock's over at Ted's house, he's got to keep it safe from thieves. Now, in the first scenario, that's not the case, but in this scenario, it is. Of a theory that the idea is that money and goods can be stolen a whole lot easier than livestock can be. If someone rolls into a field, you're probably going to see their truck and their trailer, modern day, you're probably going to see their truck and their trailer and hear a lot of noise as they're trying to steal this animal. But in this scenario, if it is stolen, Ted's on the hook for it. All right, next one. 8C, your livestock entrusted to me that has been killed by another animal, verse 13. If it is torn by beasts, let him bring it as evidence. He shall not make restitution for what has been torn. right? So I take my livestock to go over to Ted's house because I'm going out of town, whatever the case may be. I've accepted the risk that some of Ted's animals might kill it, or that coyotes behind Ted's house might kill it. I accepted that risk, right? That's the thinking behind the case law. Moving on. Your possessions I borrowed. Verse 14. If a man borrows anything of his neighbor, and it is injured or dies, the owner not being with it, he shall make full restitution. I don't think anyone of us have a problem with that. If I borrow John Waltrip's chainsaw and it breaks while I've got it, whether I cause the damage or not, I owe him to get that fixed or owe him a chainsaw. Moving on. 9b, your possessions I am using with you. And your outline shows verse 14. It should say verse 15. Again, I noticed at 11:30 at night and I already printed off 60 of these, so deal with it. Let's see. If the owner was with it, he shall not make restitution. So this one kind of made me scratch my brain a little bit. Let's go back to the chainsaw. Let's say that I borrow John's chainsaw, and he's there with me, and I'm cutting a tree down with him, and the chainsaw fails, breaks, whatever. It's hard for me to imagine that I wouldn't feel responsible for that, because I think I would. But the idea behind this is that if it fails because it failed, that's not on me. If it failed with me, it was going to fail with him. Unless I'm juggling it on top of my roof. In that scenario, John ought to be able to say, no. He has as much of a responsibility to stop me from using his property in an unintended way than I do. Right? Next one. 9C. Your possessions I hired. Straightforward. If it was hired, it came for its hiring fee. It's a known risk. You knew that was a possibility whenever you leased your property. So, I know we went through those kind of fast. I apologize, but I had to. In all of those case laws, the principle, the moral principle applies. And if you don't remember anything, remember this. That if you are responsible for my loss, point one, not point whatever on the back page, if you are responsible for my loss, you are morally responsible for my restitution. Still, that is the underlying moral principle in all of these. Point 10, use caution to ensure ensure. You are not required to pay restitution. Or you might say use caution to not cause a loss. That is the reason why these case laws exist. These case laws didn't necessarily exist so that people would pay restitution. These case laws existed to push people away from doing these things, from these failures. Some forms of restitution, as we can look back in our lives and see, and as we can see in these texts, that some forms of restitution require more than simply getting back someone back to square one. We saw that in the text. We can see that with our history. All right, here's where I'm going to slow down, and we are almost done. Point 11, use extreme caution to ensure not to cause a loss when the restitution is intangible. So I have a theory that in all these scenarios, if we were to apply all these scenarios literally with 21st century application, that there probably wouldn't be a whole lot of risk here. That if John and I got livestock and we're next door neighbors and they get tangled up together, we're going to make it right. The problem is, this is why I needed your help to begin with. The problem is that there's more that these principles apply to than possessions. Work for you. But in 2 Samuel chapter 12, Nathan goes to David. And he says, there's a rich man and he's got all these sheep, and there's a poor man and he's got one. the poor man. The poor man raised the sheep from the get-go, fed it out of his hand, raised it with his children. The rich man needs the sheep, and rather than slaughtering one of his own, he steals the poor man's. So David blows up and says, what are you talking about? He says, find this man. He owes him fourfold. So David's made the connection to what Nathan's telling him to this case law. And Nathan kind of catches David in the trap, and he says, you are that man. And he goes on to talk about Uriah. He made the connection to Uriah. He goes on to talk about that and talks about how basically God has cursed his household and the sword will never leave it because of that. So Nathan shows us that it doesn't necessarily, that these principles don't necessarily have to do with literal stealing of property and with property at all, right? So I would be willing to bet that if there's an issue of theft or whatever, negligence, whatever, we're going to make it right. But in our church, not just our church, amongst Christians, that the issue comes with emotional pain. And I don't want to say hurt feelings because it's a lot deeper than that, but it's emotional pain. It's issues where we wrong each other. And those are a lot harder to make right, I think. I'll give you an example. When I've been coming down to Hebron the last few times, I've stayed in John and Susan's extra little house. And Susan, I'm not picking on you, so don't think this. But last time I was down, I went over to my buddy Robert Taylor's house, and we were playing cards, and next thing you know, it's 1 o'clock in the morning, and I thought, I'm just going to stay here because I don't want to wake them up if I go down the driveway, and I don't want to text them because if they're sleeping, I don't want to wake them up. Well, the next morning, whenever I went back over there, I saw Susan, and she says, and Susan, I'm not picking on you, so don't think that, but Susan said, you should have texted. She said, I called Christy. She didn't know where you were. She said, how was I just supposed to know you weren't dead on the side of the road? And immediately, I felt extremely guilty, and I felt terrible. I apologized to her. She accepted my apology. She said, it's no big deal, but I still felt terrible. That's a minor issue. I've gotten in a conversation in the church parking lot years ago that me and the person I was talking to were both in tears by the time the conversation was over. It was made right. But that's the problem that I think we face as a church. There are issues, not of stealing property or negligence with property, but issues where we hurt someone, we cause pain, and that's a whole lot harder to make right. We should be quick to seek restitution on your outline. Or restoration, sorry. We should be quick to seek restoration. That's the whole point of this text. We should be quick to accept less than the maximum. And we should be quick to forgive. Matthew 18:21, and this is something that we all probably know. And then Peter came up and said to him, Lord, how often will my brother sin against me and I forgive him? As many as 7 times, Jesus said to him, I do not say to you 7 times, but 70 times 7. Therefore, the kingdom of heaven may be compared to a king who wished to settle accounts with his servant. When he began to settle, one was brought to him who owed him 10,000 talents. And since he could not pay, his master ordered him to be sold, and his wife and children, and all that he had, and payment to be made. So the servant fell on his knees, imploring him, saying, have patience with me, and I will pay you everything. And out of pity for him, the master of that servant released him and forgave him the debt. But when that same servant went out, he found one of his fellow servants who owed him 100 denarii. And seizing him, he began to choke him, saying, pay what you owe. So his fellow servant fell down and pleaded with him, have patience with me and I will pay you. He refused and put him in prison until he should pay the debt. When his fellow servants saw what had taken place, they were greatly distressed, and they went and reported it to their master, all that had taken place. Then his master summoned him and said to him, you wicked servant, I forgave you all that debt because you pleaded with me, and you should have had mercy on your fellow servant as I had mercy on you. And in anger, his master delivered him to the jailers until he should pay all his debt. So also my heavenly Father will do to every one of you if you do not forgive your brother from your heart. All right, that's a text we know, or we ought to know. But that text, the idea, is very much connected to this, that we should be quick to forgive. We should be quick to not require the maximum. And our goal should not be getting someone back to where they were before, to square one. Our goal should be so that at the end of it, they are in at least just the same position, but that they have peace. That if there's a loss, I should have enough love for you and for God that I seek that you are completely restored and that you have peace. And you should have enough love for me and for God to forgive me. Let's pray.